We had shaken off Lord Mount James, and Overton had gone to consult with the other members of his team over the misfortune which had befallen them. There was a telegraph office at a short distance from the hotel. We halted outside it. "It's worth trying, Watson," said Holmes. "Of course, with a warrant, we could demand to see the counterfoils, but we have not reached that stage yet. I don't suppose they remember faces in so busy a place. Let us venture it." "I'm sorry to trouble you," said he, in his blandest manner, to the young woman behind the grating. "There is some small mistake about a telegram I sent yesterday. I have had no answer, and I very much fear that I must have omitted to put my name at the end. Could you tell me if this was so?" The young woman turned over a sheaf of counterfoils. "What o'clock was it?" she asked. "A little after six." "Whom was it to?" Holmes put his finger to his lips and glanced at me. "The last words in it were, 'For God's sake,'" he whispered confidentially. "I'm very anxious at getting no answer." The young woman separated one of the forms. "This is it?" "There is no name," said she, smoothing it out upon the counter. "And that, of course, accounts for my getting no answer," said Holmes. "Dear me, how very stupid of me, to be sure. Good morning, miss, and many thanks for having relieved my mind." He chuckled and rubbed his hands when we found ourselves in the street once more. "Well," I asked, "we progress, my dear Watson, we progress. I had seven different schemes for getting a glimpse of that telegram, but I could hardly hope to succeed the very first time." "And what have you gained?" "A starting point for our investigation." He hailed a cab. "King's Cross Station," said he. "We have a journey, then?" "Yes, I think we must run down to Cambridge together. All the indications seem to me to point in that direction." "Tell me," I asked, as we rattled up Gray's Inn Road, "have you any suspicion yet as to the cause of the disappearance? I don't think that among all our cases I have known one where the motives are more obscure. Surely you don't really imagine that he may be kidnapped in order to give information against his wealthy uncle?" "I confess, my dear Watson, that that does not appeal to me as a very probable explanation. It struck me, however, as being the one which was most likely to interest that exceedingly unpleasant old person." "It certainly did that. But what are your alternatives?" "I could mention several. You must admit that it is curious and suggestive that this incident should occur on the eve of this important match, and should involve the only man whose presence seems essential to the success of the side. It may, of course, be a coincidence, but it is interesting. Amateur sport is free from betting, but a good deal of outside betting goes on among the public, and it is possible that it might be worth someone's while to get at a player as the ruffians of the turf get at a racehorse. There is one explanation. A second very obvious one is that this young man really is the heir of a great property, however modest his means may at present be, and it is not impossible that a plot to hold him for ransom might be concocted." "These theories take no account of the telegram." "Quite true, Watson. The telegram still remains the only solid thing with which we have to deal, and we must not permit our attention to wander away from it. It is to gain light upon the purpose of this telegram that we are now upon our way to Cambridge. The path of our investigation is at present obscure, but I shall be very much surprised if before evening we have not cleared it up or made a considerable advance along it." It was already dark when we reached the old university city. Holmes took a cab at the station and ordered the man to drive to the house of Dr. Leslie Armstrong. A few minutes later, we had stopped at the large mansion in the busiest thoroughfare. We were shown in, and after a long wait, were at last admitted into the consulting room, where we found the doctor seated behind his table. "It argues the degree in which I had lost touch with my profession that the name of Leslie Armstrong was unknown to me. Now I am aware that he is not only one of the heads of the medical school of the university, but a thinker of European reputation in more than one branch of science. Yet, even without knowing his brilliant record, one could not fail to be impressed by a mere glance at the man, the square, massive face, the brooding eyes under the thatched brows, and the granite moulding of the inflexible jaw. A man of deep character, a man with an alert mind, grim, ascetic, self-contained, formidable. so I read Dr. Leslie Armstrong. He held my friend's card in his hand, and he looked up with no very pleased expression upon his dour features. "I have heard your name, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and I am aware of your profession, one of which I by no means approve." "In that, doctor, you will find yourself in agreement with every criminal in the country," said my friend quietly. "So far as your efforts are directed towards the suppression of crime, sir, they must have the support of every reasonable member of the community, though I cannot doubt that the official machinery is amply sufficient for the purpose. Where your calling is more open to criticism is when you pry into the secrets of private individuals, when you rake up family matters which are better hidden, and when you incidentally waste the time of men who are more busy than yourself. At the present moment, for example, I should be writing a treatise instead of conversing with you." "No doubt, doctor, and yet the conversation may prove more important than the treatise. Incidentally, I may tell you that we are doing the reverse of what you very justly blame, and that we are endeavouring to prevent anything like public exposure of private matters which must necessarily follow when once the case is fairly in the hands of the official police. You may look upon me simply as an irregular pioneer, who goes in front of the regular forces of the country. I have come to ask you about Mr. Godfrey Staunton."
"What about him?"
"You know him, do you not? He's an intimate friend of mine. You are aware that he has disappeared?"
"Ah, indeed."
There was no change of expression in the rugged features of the doctor. "He left his hotel last night. He has not been heard of."
"No doubt he will return.
Tomorrow is the varsity football match.
I have no sympathy with these childish games. The young man's fate interests me deeply, since I know him and like him. The football match does not come within my horizon at all."
"I claim your sympathy, then, in my investigation of Mr. Staunton's fate. Do you know where he is?"
"Certainly not."
"You have not seen him since yesterday?"
"No, I have not."
"Was Mr. Staunton a healthy man?"
"Absolutely."
"Did you ever know him ill?"
"Never."
Holmes popped a sheet of paper before the doctor's eyes. "Then perhaps you will explain this receipted bill for 13 guineas, paid by Mr. Godfrey Staunton last month to Dr. Leslie Armstrong of Cambridge. I picked it out from among the papers upon his desk." The doctor flushed with anger.
"I do not feel that there is any reason why I should render an explanation to you, Mr. Holmes."
Holmes replaced the bill in his notebook. "If you prefer a public explanation, it must come sooner or later," said he. "I have already told you that I can hush up that which others will be bound to publish, and you would really be wiser to take me into your complete confidence."
"I know nothing about it."
"Did you hear from Mr. Staunton in London?"
"Certainly not."
"Dear me, dear me. The post office again?" Holmes sighed wearily. "A most urgent telegram was dispatched to you from London by Godfrey Staunton at 6:15 yesterday evening, a telegram which is undoubtedly associated with his disappearance, and yet you have not had it? It is most culpable. I shall certainly go down to the office here and register a complaint." Dr. Leslie Armstrong sprang up from behind his desk, and his dark face was crimson with fury.
"I'll trouble you to walk out of my house, sir," said he. "You can tell your employer, Lord Mountjames, that I do not wish to have anything to do either with him or with his agents. No, sir, not another word."
He rang the bell furiously.
"John, show these gentlemen out."
A pompous butler ushered us severely to the door, and we found ourselves in the street. Holmes burst out laughing.
"Ha, ha! Dr. Leslie Armstrong is certainly a man of energy and character," said he.
"I have not seen a man who, if he turns his talents that way, was more calculated to fill the gap left by the illustrious Moriarty. And now, my poor Watson, here we are, stranded and friendless in this inhospitable town, which we cannot leave without abandoning our case. This little inn just opposite Armstrong's house is singularly adapted to our needs. If you would engage a front room and purchase the necessaries for the night, I may have time to make a few inquiries."